Sit back, relax, and raise a glass for spirits coming from the past. Sip on salt while your skin crawls with your pre-haunting wolf having a ball. Your favorite ghouls, gather the others, no hesitating. The moment's approaching, it's now time to sing. Haunts and hearts, haunts and hearts, crack open the can and fill to the top. Haunts and hearts, haunts and hearts, this is your podcast and it's called Haunts and Hearts.
No matter where you are joining us from, welcome back to our realm. This is Haunts and Hops, the podcast that covers all things paranormal while enjoying the science of delicious beer. Follow us on all social media platforms at Haunts and Hops. I'm Johnny Laquasto, and now allow me to introduce the true royalty of Haunts and Hops, starting with a veteran paranormal investigator, formerly of Ghost Hunters, countless paranormal experiences, and a scrumptious beer in her hand. Find her on the socials at Ashley Trobe, as she is the always outstanding Ashley Trobe.
Hey, what's going on?
It's episode two. We're back at it.
Episode two. It seems like it's taken so long to get here, but man, we are rolling. We have good things coming. I'm so excited.
The Haunts and Hops train is chugging along, and we are going to round out this trifecta with a certified paranormal investigator, as well as certified in cryptozoology. She knows this unknown world so well. Plus, she can act, sing, and make you laugh. The bold, the amazing Anastasia Washington.
Wow, thank you. Hi.
Oh, wow.
I believe the spirit of a Southern Belle is inhabiting the body of Anastasia Washington.
It's true.
Well, your mom's from New Orleans, so I mean.
It is. She is, and it comes through sometimes. I don't know. It's all that Gone with the Wind upbringing. Just kidding. Wow. Just kidding.
Gonna leave that one be, but we have an exciting episode. Brandon Alves coming up in just a bit. But first things first, such fun feedback on the first episode. It just motivates us to keep going, and it's great to see that everyone enjoyed the first one.
I was on a chat a couple nights ago with some friends, and I asked my friends, like, hey, did you guys watch it? And one of my friends was so excited. He was like, it was so amazing. Everything flowed really well. I can't wait to see what you guys are going to bring on next. So that was just one person, but I'll take it. Like,
yeah.
I'll take it.
But it's going to be good. He's been a fan and friend for quite some time. And so he's seen everything I've done over the last 10 years. And so for him to say that this is still good after 10 years, that's something.
After all this time, I feel like there's a song there.
After all this time. Clearly, we all have drinks in our hands. So.
Yes.
Anastasia, what beverage are you indulging in for this episode?
I am drinking Lagunitas Hi-Fi Hops. It is a hop water with THC and CBD.
Oh, you did it.
Mm.
We had talked about you doing this for a while, and you finally went through with it. I am proud of you.
Yeah, it's so good. I always have a couple in the refrigerator, but this one is 5 and 5. So it's a good light. Hi.
I'm so blown away by the ingredients. You said there's CBD and what else?
THC.
Oh, so you'll be asleep by the end of this episode, basically.
No, I don't sleep.
Oh, perfect. All right, Ashley.
Amazing. It tastes like hoppy water, so it's great. It's very refreshing.
How can you follow THC, CBD, beer water?
I can't, but I can make Anastasia proud today. Okay. For anybody that has listened to this show or previous shows that Anastasia and I have done over the last several years, I love IPAs, and all I like to do is drink IPAs and watch Anastasia have a meltdown about it. And it makes me so happy that today I am drinking a Modern Times Fruitlands Mai Tai Edition Sour. And I know the face of Anastasia. It's a sour. I'm drinking a sour today. It's orange, lime, and pineapple, which is absolutely delicious. It's got 10 IBU, and it is so smooth. And it's one of their limited edition beers. If you haven't gotten it yet, it's only around for a little bit longer, so I would recommend going out right away to get it.
My jaw has dropped. You're sipping on a sour right now.
Mm-hmm. It's a weird world we live in. Quarantine changed me.
Also, it's a limited edition, so I gotta go, you guys.
Yeah, bye.
Wow. Miss Hoppy herself, Ashley Trobe, sipping on a sour for this episode.
Woof. I thought I'd change
so
it up.
Proud. My girl's grown.
Well, don't worry, Ash. I'm going to go right back to the hops. I'm also on the Lagunitas bandwagon. I'm drinking the Super Cluster Ale, described on the can as a citra-hopped mega ale of intergalactic proportions.
I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of hype.
Yeah, it's a lot of hype, and it's clocking in at 8% with the ABV, and you can taste every single of the 1,000 pounds of whatever, how many hops they put in. It's there. So we got the beers, but moving on, if you would like to share your paranormal experiences with us, it's simple. We have a voicemail set up for Haunts and Hops, 818-660-6191. We had an amazing voicemail for our first episode.
We did. And now we have another one.
Hi, I like ghosts.
Quick and to the point.
That was a really clear voicemail.
Right? It's crazy.
Very quick and to the point. But yeah, give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. We would love to feature it on the show. But before we get to our incredible special guest, Brandon Alves, it is time for the weekly Supernatural Scoop. Okay, so during the pandemic, haunted houses appear to be on the rise. Paranormal researcher and former host of Ghost Stalkers on Destination America, which at one point, Destination America, if you guys remember, they were trying to become the paranormal cable network. His name is John E.L. Tenney, says that before the pandemic, he would receive about 2 to 5 calls a month from people convinced that their homes are haunted. Since the pandemic, he's averaging about 5 to 10 calls per week. Before we go further, what are your thoughts? Why do you think that's the case?
I think that if they're home more often, they're going to have a lot more experiences. I mean, they spent so much time being away from home, working their day jobs, going out and about, going out to dinner. You're only home for so much of your day. And so if you're going to be spending quarantine at your home, you're going to notice a lot more things happening. So I think that that's inevitable to find out that more people are realizing their homes are haunted.
Yeah. And on that same vein, I think if you're home a lot and you're kind of going stir crazy, there might be some little bit false reporting happening because, you know, you're at home, maybe drinking, maybe getting high. I don't know. Stuff
or yoga.
Happens.
Maybe
or yoga. Maybe you're doing yoga and that causes ghosts.
So
yoga ghost.
Yoga ghosts.
Tenney says that people are reporting, you know, the usuals, the knocks, the footsteps, some voices, even text messages from deceased friends and relatives. He's even had an uptick in UFO sightings because since quarantine, we just have more time to go out and stare at the sky.
That's also true.
Yeah. And here's my favorite quote from Tenney. He said, well, also, perhaps the ghosts are getting bored too. They might just not be used to inhabitants being there so much. So they're starting to show off, which I love that idea.
That's amazing.
A bored ghost. A ghost is like, you know, this, you just sit there all day. You just sit there all day. Let me just mess some stuff up.
Ooh, yeah. Watch this. Let's see what they get.
Because we all know the spirits think they own the house. They don't want people there that often. So yeah, let's mess with them a little bit, right?
It's like our pets, how our pets are getting annoyed with us. It's the same. It's the ghosts are getting annoyed with us as well.
Very much so. And of course, it could also be the fact that during times of stress, like a quarantine, the human brain, it tends to get ramped up. You know, you have strange dreams. You might hear things. So it could be a combination of things. Either way, in the paranormal world, we find that fun and exciting. So that was the Supernatural Scoop for the week. But coming up, special guest Brandon Alves from Ghost Hunters. We are now thrilled to welcome our very first special guest to Haunts and Hops. He's one of the best paranormal investigators in the game. You can see him on A&E's Ghost Hunters, and he's the founder of the American Paranormal Research Association. Make sure to go check out their Facebook page. Find him on social media at Brandon Alves and check out his website, brandonjalves.com. The great Brandon Alves, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Now, Ashley, you go way back with Brandon, so let's get into that friendship and bit of a mentorship as well, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, it started about 10 years ago. And we talked about this on our most recent episode about how I was on a team called the EVPs. And during that time, our lead asked Brandon and his team, APRA, to come show us some tips and tricks that we might not know yet. So they did so. And we got to know each other over the next several years. And it became not just a friendship, but I looked up to everything that Brandon did. His audio is top notch. He's super scientific based. And so anytime I had questions, I would just reach out to him. It was like the person I had to go to. So when I went on to Ghost Hunters, however many years ago that is now, a lot of the paranormal community does not like when we go into TV. They are not fans of that a lot of the time, which is understandable. There was a few people that stuck by my side. Luckily, Brandon was one of them. And now it's just really fantastic because we have switched that role. Now I am not on Ghost Hunters and Brandon is taking the reins.
That's outstanding. Now, Brandon, I believe you have a beverage as well for the show.
I do. Absolutely. I am drinking actually M Special. This is a great brewery out of Goleta, California. This is an amazing American lager. Very, very good. Crisp, clean, good day drinking beer. So perfect for the day.
Sounds amazing.
Love it.
You know, we record early a lot. Whoops.
Yeah.
It's a good way to get started.
With a 4.7% beer. Yeah. 4.7% sounded good for this time of the day. So no heavy IPAs, Ashley, not at this time.
You'd be so proud of me. You would be so proud of me, Brandon. Today I'm drinking a sour.
Oh, modern times. Nice.
I know. See, and now everybody knows that's who I am as a person. It's like Ashley and IPAs. Even Brandon calls me out and he didn't even get to hear the intro of it.
Quarantine times call for quarantine measures. So Brandon,
that's true.
Tell us about APRA, which is the American Paranormal Research Association. It's a fascinating endeavor. You founded the entire organization. And I read up on it and, you know, followed it on Facebook and everything. It's about taking the scientific approach to investigation, which to me would help incredibly with skeptics. But what are the core aspects of what APRA does?
Well, you know, I founded the organization in 2006 to solely investigate historical locations throughout the United States from a scientific perspective. And, you know, my journey into the paranormal began in 1995. I lost my oldest brother to cancer. In 2004, I lost another brother to suicide. So that kind of sent me into my journey into the paranormal, if you will, and trying to find a possible existence of a life after death. So for me, I didn't get involved in the paranormal because I had an experience per se. It was more about having to grow up at a young age and really know that death is an inevitable part of life. All of us are going to go through that. But, you know, as a kid, I always thought, well, is there a next step? Is there an ultimate transition? So before I ever stepped foot in the field or started APRA, I, you know, got my hands on as much literature as possible, everything from psychic phenomena to scientific investigation. And I started reaching out to medical professionals, doctors, engineers, scientists, to help me remain grounded in scientific principle before going out and investigating with APRA. And I did so. I spoke to these people, comprised a panel of these professionals, and they helped me remain grounded in scientific principle to push this field forward, to be taken seriously, to really step out of the shadow of pseudoscience. And it's something I'm really proud of to this day.
Talking on that, so I know that you just finished the season finale of Ghost Hunters pretty recently, and you had some really amazing scientific discoveries. Are you allowed to talk about that? Do you want to touch on that at all?
Absolutely. I would love to. You know, that's one thing, like Ashley talked about earlier, with the paranormal community, a lot of times they look at TV as being, you know, fictional or as being something that's set up or faked. That was one thing for me. If I was going to get involved with Ghost Hunters, I had many meetings with A&E as well as the production company Pilgrim Films about going in and them allowing me to conduct my research. They contacted me to come and investigate the paranormal. And if that wasn't going to be the case, I just didn't want to be involved. So they assured me that if I was going to come on board, that they would allow me to investigate the way I've always done it. They love APRA. They love the mindset of APRA. And they like that it kind of took, you know, Ghost Hunters to that next step in the field, as far as not being TAPS, not being the original show, but creating a new methodology, creating a new style of research. And they afforded me that opportunity, which was great. And I called in a lot of favors from the scientific community, people I've known for many years, Dr. Harry Klor being one of them. I know Ashley's met him a few times. He's the only person in history to receive two PhDs simultaneously in any discipline. And he got that in physics and chemistry. And he's someone I've worked closely with for 10 years now, a decade. And I called in favors and yet again went to these people. I said, if ghosts are real and they are manifesting from a scientific perspective, how would that happen? And they threw out the theory that there's a very particular matter that may be associated with what people perceive to be ghosts, and that's photon events. And photon events are all throughout the universe, right? They're light events that carry electromagnetic radiation, which is really interesting. So I was sent out a camera called an EMCCD camera, an electron multiplying camera, that is built by the digital imaging scientific community to record these photon events. And I took it into these haunted locations throughout the country, utilized it in locations that had a bunch of eyewitness reports, and we made some tremendous breakthroughs, not only capturing amazing imagery of things that didn't show up in other spectrums and other cameras, but we do know that there is a very particular matter associated with the possible manifestation of entities, and that is photon events. So now we're talking about the paranormal on a scientific level, and it's amazing. Very proud of it, and I can't wait to continue that research to really take that extra step to prove that these photon events are what people perceive to be ghosts.
And that's It's huge, not just for the paranormal community, but for the scientific community. Like, this is so groundbreaking, and it's going to be life-changing for a lot of paranormal investigators, because now, you know, there are so many people that are weekend warriors that just go into it for the fun. And now we have more substantial evidence showing that there's life after death. And we don't know how it works exactly yet, but now, like, there's something to base it off of, which is super big and hasn't happened quite this way before.
No, it hasn't. That's one thing that's really interesting. One particular image that I collected at Fort Stanton in New Mexico was this complete absence of light that peeks out of a doorway. It is in a humanoid shape. It looks like a person. But the beauty of this camera and using the EMCCD camera that records photon events is when I showed this to one of the consultants that I work with for many years, he said that this is mind-blowing, one, because there should not be a complete absence of light. That's not how this camera works. And two, these photon events and that complete absence of light should not be created in one image. It should be separate images. And for that to come together to create one image was mind-blowing to these people, and very exciting for the field.
Wow.
So essentially that was proof that there was some kind of anomaly there.
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's amazing, because, you know, I can use the camera. I understand how to set it up, how to run it. But when it comes to the analysis portion, I'm not a scientist. So I had to speak to scientists that really could break it down frame by frame and really tell me what I was looking at. We captured some really amazing stuff, not only in Fort Stanton, but three other places in season two that really provided this huge breakthrough that we have now, that there's something to photon events and something to what people perceive to be ghosts.
Where did the idea come from to use the EMCCD camera? Because obviously I can't imagine it was invented for the paranormal specifically, but to have the kind of creativity behind it said, oh, you know what, that could actually work. How did that come about?
Well, again, I've comprised this panel of experts that I've been working with for many years, and I've reached out to I think four or five different people I've been working with for a number of years. One is a NASA engineer who talked about photon events heavily. Dr. Harry Klor is another person that's talked about photon events with me, and I really wanted to go down that road to really observe that. And luckily enough, I had a connection that had one of the EMCCD cameras, which is very difficult to get your hands on. It's solely used by the digital imaging scientific community. So they sent it out to me. They let me utilize it in my research. And we were testing a theory that if ghosts are real from a scientific perspective, we have to look at photons and try and record those photons in said haunted places. And that's what we did. And we had tremendous results.
And they were studying photons for, like, NASA was studying photons for what purpose? Was it, like presence of otherworldly life? What were they using photon technology for before?
Well, the universe is made up of photons. So All throughout the universe, you'll see photonic events happening in different shapes and forms. But there is a debate in the scientific community that they think that these photon events may have a consciousness, which is something they've always talked about. And there's a really great interview with Dr. Pimrose. I think Joe Rogan did it, but I think he's talked to other people where he talks specifically about photon events in the universe and how they believe there's possibly a consciousness associated with that. So the next question from a scientific perspective is, are those photonic events happening on Earth? And if they're happening on Earth in these said haunted locations, is that what we're dealing with? And I think that we're definitely onto something at this point.
So one thing I want to point out for anybody that has not been following Brandon and on his journey with Ghost Hunters, all of him pushing these limits are not a new thing. Like since I've known him, every investigation we've ever done, he's always pushing the limits. He's trying new things that nobody's ever tried before. Now I know I respect it. I love it. I think it's super fantastic what you do, but Ghost Hunters fans can be a little bit picky. So how has that been received? Because I know I get messages a lot asking about why Grant isn't doing this and that. And so I know it's been a little bit difficult and it's a transition because the fans aren't used to such a heavily based scientific show. And so how is that going for you right now?
It's been good. I mean, at first it was difficult. The whole first season, you know, I started to slowly implement the scientific perspective and the scientific methodology. And I started to do that by introducing, recording all the environmental conditions in locations. And that was something that was really pushed heavily in season one. I think something that's really easy from a scientific perspective for a majority of the paranormal field to grasp and really look at to see if there is a change in the environment in these locations, pressure, temperature, humidity, EMF, vibration, things of that nature. But then season two comes around and we kicked it up to a whole new level because Grant, you know, took a step back. You know, he had the team go out by themselves and I was brought into a new role where I was leading the team. And to me, it was all about implementing my methodology, my research, which I was afforded that opportunity. And I said, okay, if we're going to do this, let's go full bore. Let's really go heavy science, because if we're going to be taken seriously, we have to do this. And that's what we did. And once people saw the results and they saw the images coming out of the EMCCD camera, and then later in the season, you'll see that not only were we collecting these amazing images with the photon camera, but I started to pair that with data loggers and recording the environmental conditions. And we started to see a pattern where if there was a change in the environment in the room, we should expect to see something. And we actually did successfully have that in an experiment in Galena, Illinois, at the Galena Marine Hospital, where I set up a data logger in the view of the EMCCD camera. We started to see pressure changes. And 5 seconds later, lo and behold, photon events started to show up within the room. And that's taking that scientific perspective to the next level. So it's kind of a slow rollout, right? The first season, more about the environmental conditions, recording those environmental conditions, finding patterns within those, and then going a step further by trying to visually correlate that. And that's what we did in season two. So it started kind of slow, just kind of baby steps for the field. And then season two really just, you know, blew the lid off of it and kind of showed everyone what I've been trying to do since 2006. And it's just the beginning, because there's a lot more research to be done.
What I loved about your approach is, you know, over the past decade, many would probably consider Ghost Hunters to be the most credible ghost hunting television show, but you still were unsure. You basically told them, like, look, you're like your own general manager. Like, look, this is my style. If my style doesn't fit with your show, I don't want to do it. I give you all the credit in the world, because a lot of people would just be willing to jump on television, but you wanted to make sure that you had your approach, which you consider to be the best approach. So I think that's amazing that you know, that they accepted that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And Ashley's known me a long time, and I never had a desire to be on television. That was never my thing. You know, I've always been a behind the camera guy. You know, I've been a filmmaker for many years. I worked for ABC, CBS, Fox. So I know how that world is. And I know how that world works. So to me, I'm all about credibility and getting out there and doing proper research and really stepping out of the shadow of pseudoscience. I don't want to be involved with a gimmicky TV show, which almost 99% of them are that, right? I don't want to be involved in that, especially put my face on that, because that's my credibility. That's my career. That's my future. And if that was going to be jeopardized in any way, shape, or form, I would just rather do what I've been doing since 2006, no skin off my back, because I don't want to be involved with something that's, you know, not credible. So that was a big thing for me, a really make or break situation.
Now, I want to continue with paranormal stories, but you had such a good segue, I can't not do it. But being a filmmaker and always working behind the camera, Anastasia is so excited.
I'm so excited.
We really want you to talk about Cemetery Park. Can you tell us about this, please?
Sure, absolutely. It was 2014. I moved to Ventura, California, and I moved to this place on Hemlock Street, right on Hemlock and Main, this old apartment building that it was the only thing I could afford at the time. I didn't have a lot of money, studio apartment.
I remember.
I moved next to this place. Yeah. I moved next to this place called Cemetery Memorial Park. I never really thought much about it. I thought it was just a name until I started talking to the locals around here, people that have lived here a long time, and they started to tell me that it was a cemetery. I thought it was an oral legend, kind of a urban legend, if you will. And I started to do a little research on it, and I found out that there's over 3,000 people buried in what's now a dog park. And I started to look into that, and I found this man named Stephen Schlater, who's been fighting the city for 16 years now. I found out that the city did a very horrible, illegal thing in the 1960s, where they demolished a 7-acre pioneer cemetery and removed all the headstones illegally. I was compelled to tell that story. And it's something I've worked on. It was an official selection of the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, which is one of the top five in the country. And it's a very heavy-hitting true crime story about the illegalities of a city that did things highly illegally and has never really paid for it. And hopefully this film is going to change that one day.
I'm so excited for this. Like, I just want to watch it. Like, and I've been telling everybody that it's out there. Yes. Like, I really have. I was like, have you heard about Cemetery Park? There's a documentary that you need to check out. I don't know how you're going to see it, but yeah.
So the question I have is, you mentioned in the 1960s, they did this illegally, and if 3,000-ish people buried in the cemetery there, were there not families that were completely outraged that this was happening, or were they just silenced because it was the 60s and you could silence anyone in the 60s?
Well, that's the interesting portion. You know, that's a big part of the film, is that when I first started speaking to Steve Schlater, he's the main, you know, figure in the film. I thought the guy was a conspiracy theorist. The stuff he was telling me, I was like, no way someone could do this and get away with it. There's no way. And he kept telling me these things, and I was filming him over time, you know, over a couple months. And he one day laid out over 10,000 documents on my table and said, hey, look through it. See if I'm a conspiracy theorist. And I started to go through all these documents and found out shortly that there was a huge cover up. There was a lot of really shady things that the city did, much that the families did not know about. And they had ways of getting around it. I don't want to give too much away because it's in the film, but there were ways of them getting around what they did. And it's highly illegal. And it's all laid out in the film. And the beauty of it is, it's not just us saying it. It's not us making an accusation against the city. There is physical documentation supporting everything that we mentioned in the film. If we talk about something the city did, we show it on paper. We show their own words written out with letterheads addressed to people, signed, showing that they did these things. And it's unbelievable. I can't believe we're talking about pioneers. We're talking about immigrants. We're talking about people that came to this country to make a better lives for themselves. And their last place, their last resting place, which was a huge part of the 1800s, the 1900s, these people really believed in death and life after death, and graves and their final resting place to them is sacred. And that was completely ripped out and taken from them by the city. And we show that and showcase that in the film. And you'll see some documents in there that'll just really piss you the hell off if you have a conscience.
So do you still live in the community? Do you get interesting reactions from the community, or are
I do live in the community. I live not far from the cemetery still. The film has not been released. It's only been screened 3 times, so the film has not been released to the public, and it's looking at a 2021 release date. I'm still working on that. We'll see how that goes. As everyone knows, in the entertainment industry, things could change very quickly. But we're looking at a 2021 release date, and I'm talking with a few different distributors about getting that film out there. And I think once the city gets the heat, I think that they're going to have to address it in some way, shape, or form, especially now, especially the climate we're in these days. And there's a lot of controversy in Ventura right now, you know, and so there's people that have lived here for 40 years that have no idea what happened. So I think that once this is exposed and once people understand, I think it's going to change a few things.
Well, I mean, even being my hometown, I was born and raised there, lived near Cemetery Park for years. I had no idea. I thought it was just a fun name as well. And so it honestly, and this sounds terrible on my part, I know this, but it took you telling me about this. And I was very lucky to be able to watch the film through film festivals. And it's kind of life-changing when you actually think about how easy it was for them to cover it up. And it makes you wonder, like, what is being covered up around us otherwise? Because this was huge, and this affected so, so many people. And a lot of people still don't know yet and won't know until that this film is released.
Exactly. That's another thing that's an interesting portion of this film is that it's not only the city that's culpable. The Catholic Church was right there with them, involved in the whole thing. So you'll see that play out in the film. You'll see how it comes together. And it's heartbreaking, man. It is hard to watch. And one thing is being a filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker, you have to remain as unbiased as possible. Like it's really hard not to get emotionally invested in those situations. And that's why it was hard for me not only to go in and hear about this and kind of, it's all unfolding to me as the film's being made. So I'm kind of seeing it as it's happening almost in real time, at least the way I learned. But the biggest thing to me was actually showing these documents that, you know, Steve got through a Freedom of Information Act, you know, which is because the city of Ventura is a corporation and is using taxpayer dollars to operate. Those documents are our property as well. So through the Freedom of Information Act, Steve got these documents and it's really condemning to the city and highly, highly illegal. So there's one portion in the film and one document in particular that is the smoking gun that takes it that extra step to show how illegal it was. And it's signed by the city, letterhead and all. It's right there in front of our faces. And it's crazy because Steve never saw that document. There's so many of them that I found that document and I set up, you know, time to film with Steve. I handed the document to him on camera, had him read it and got his take, you know, in real time on the film. And that's a huge moment. It's pretty unbelievable.
Well, to add to the enraging feelings that I'm feeling is the fact that Ventura County and my brother lives in Santa Barbara. He's been there for 20 years. That whole area is historically so inspired by Hispanic culture. And you mentioned the immigrants. I mean, I would imagine most of that cemetery were probably people of color that were buried and just forgotten about.
100%. You're right. You're 100% right. You have the Catholic faith. You have the Jewish faith. You have the Protestant faith. You have so over 3,000 of these people. This was one time was, you know, Mexican occupied California. It was Mexico at that time. And then once that transition started to be made where, you know, it was part of the United States, it was all people of color out here. I mean, we're talking about a city named San Buenaventura. This place was all people from all over the world, Italy, Spain. I mean, anywhere you can imagine, you could throw a dart at a map and I'm sure it's going to hit a place that someone came from and is now interred in a desecrated cemetery.
So it's like the sequel to like Poltergeist.
That's actually funny you bring that up. Some say that Poltergeist was actually Cemetery Park was the influence for that idea for Poltergeist, you know. So that's been floated around a lot.
I could see that. And there's also, I think it was Denver Airport. Every time I went into Denver Airport, they were talking about like how there's all these ghostly activities because it was just built on a graveyard or cemetery plot for Native Americans. So stop building stuff on graveyards.
Yeah, especially that's another thing about Cemetery Memorial Park or, you know, in cemetery that's there. St. Mary's is what it was called at one time. There was a lot of, it was originally a Native American gravesite, you know, and that's would be an obvious place for them to continue to bury people, right? So they're like, okay, the people that were here before us and are continuing to be here, this is where they bury their dead. So we'll continue to bury people here as well. So there's every faith, every creed, every skin color, they're all there. They're all there. And they're all now in a disrespected state. I guess that's the way I can put it.
To follow up that point, have you done an investigation? I would imagine.
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
I would imagine it has to be active when, you know, you have so many graves that you mentioned were desecrated. I could only think it's just hopping.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of stories because, you know, I've been involved with the paranormal field so long and I've been a filmmaker as well. I wanted to kind of separate those two things and do a film that was not paranormal related, more true crime. So I didn't touch on any of the paranormal stuff. I never dabbled into investigating it from that perspective. But all of the apartment buildings surrounding the cemetery, all of them claim to have activity. All of them, every single one. So I've heard a lot of stories about people experiencing paranormal phenomena around the cemetery. And I experienced a lot in my apartment building, which is right next to it. I would look out my window every morning and look at that cemetery. And I had a lot of experiences. So but I never actually investigated it myself, but there's a lot of people that claim to have some pretty crazy stuff happen.
All right, so we're going to lean away from the film for a minute, even though everybody here is still freaking out. I know that, you know, we've done plenty of paranormal investigations. We've had plenty of scenarios that we have investigated where there was no haunting, or maybe there was a haunting, but the experience that we have was not paranormal in any way. Is there anything that you can think of where you're like, oh yeah, that was absolutely not paranormal, but it was a wild ride?
Absolutely. I think there's a time where you and I were in Linda Vista Hospital, one of the many times we're at Linda Vista Hospital in Los Angeles. Yeah, Boyle Heights, California down there. And I think we were given a tour one night and we had a group of people, I think probably 15 or 20 people with us. And we were on our way from the main hospital to the mental hospital section, which is connected by an underground tunnel. And we got right to the mental hospital section when all of a sudden all of the doors in the hospital shut at once, just very loud, very abrasive. Everyone jumped. I think everyone was pretty terrified at that point.
Goosebumps.
And so the first thing Ashley and I did was just, okay, what the hell was that? First off, let's all remain, you know, as grounded as possible. Let's look into this. And we found out shortly later that the power actually went out and all the fire doors in the building, which are held open by magnetic sensors, all shut off and they all slammed at once. So it seemed like a very unexplainable experience at the time, but it was a very, very explainable and actually kind of funny in retrospect.
Oh, it was so funny because I feel like Brandon and I were leading the tour. And so imagine what you're supposed to say when every single door in an insane asylum shuts all at once and you're just like, okay, so everyone has flashlights, right? Like, let's figure out what's going on. Luckily, we had walkies and we were able to walkie up above eventually and figure out what had happened. But, you know, it's so funny because I just feel like so many people in the paranormal world just see everything as an experience and everything as evidence. And we had a really fantastic experience that had nothing to do with the paranormal. It just happened to be in a paranormal or haunted location. And I think it's so funny because you never know when it comes to investigations, what kind of wild things like that might happen.
Yeah. Not only that, I think it was a great learning experience for everyone that was on the tour. I think it was a good exercise in practical and critical thinking, right? Where majority of people, especially some of these TV shows, which we all know about, would have called that, you know, some kind of demon or something. It would have been like, oh my gosh, it's not a coincidence, things like that. So it was a really great exercise for the people we were with to say, hey, look, slow down. Let's think about this. Let's go through each floor and look at it one by one. And lo and behold, very much a natural explanation.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I love about it too, is I've had that happen enough times where there was something that was just like, ooh, that was really fun. Not evidence. Don't get to use it as evidence. And it makes it a little bit more difficult. But the same thing with evidence. So, Brandon, I know that you're not necessarily a big Spirit Box fan. I'm not a big Spirit Box fan. And we had this fantastic thing happen like 6 or 7 years ago. I don't know if you want to lead with this because I think it would be great to hear from your side of the story. But Spirit Box really wasn't a fan of me. And I don't know if you want to get into that.
Yeah, and it was Preston Castle. Preston School of Ministry, which is an amazing location that we've investigated multiple times. Really, really cool place. And it was one of the few times that we were using a spirit box in a situation and had some really vulgar things come through, which I thought was very interesting. You know, it's one of those situations where I used a spirit box and was in a situation in a session like that where I couldn't quite explain it because obviously anytime you use a spirit box, you have to kind of throw it out because it's scanning radio frequencies. And if you want to really do an analysis and really break down what's happening with the spirit box, it's contaminated because it's all radio frequencies. So if you take that into a spectrum analysis and have an audio engineer look at that, you will see that it's all contaminated. It's all radio frequencies. But the stuff coming through directed at Ashley was something you wouldn't hear on the radio, that's for sure.
What would that be?
You go ahead and say it. I'm not going to say it.
So that's what was so, I think, so at that time, so we're sitting in a circle, we're all doing this investigation and we're asking the spirit box questions and I'm feeling something touching my back. And I was just like, what is that? And I look over at my friend and I tell her, I was like, something's like touching me. I can feel something touching me. And she asks, why are you bothering Ashley? And I don't remember if it was the word, it could be either or word. It was either slut or whore. And then legitimate children's laughter, which I know that we've talked about this on the show before, but now I know that Brandon can speak for it because everybody just got really quiet because we were like, oh, that's terrifying. And I didn't, you know, that was a fun experience. It wasn't evidence, though. We couldn't really use it as evidence.
Yeah.
And so I know.
That's a fun experience.
I love getting called a whore in general. I think, the I got to say, the creepiest part of that was that child's laughter. That
oh,
was,
yeah. We later learned that that's a common experience in there too. Remember that? They would have spirit boxes or obelisks and all those kind of devices, those goofy devices that they use that would say the same language. And like, come on, these kids are, some of them are 12, 13, 14 years old. And if these kids, you know, are still inhabiting the building, I mean, that sounds like something they would do. You know what I mean? Just being punk ass little kids, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a common experience there.
Potty exactly. mouth kids.
Well, that's so many years later. I don't know if it was the same one, but Brandon, was it the same spirit box that you lent me?
Mm-hmm.
Years later, I'm gonna go film some stuff, and I'm working with some friends, and so we're going to a location, and we had this really good idea that we wanted to use the spirit box. So I hit up Brandon. I was like, "Hey, you're the tech guy of tech guys. Can I borrow some things? Please help me." You know, the whole getting favors from friends. So we borrowed a spirit box. And again, that was the only time that I had had a reaction or like a moment where I thought, okay, maybe this is real. The spirit box might be legitimate in this case. And so we went to go film something where we put a blindfold on the girl and then we put headphones on her. So she couldn't hear anything we said. And she could only just respond with words that she heard clearly. At one point, we ask what its problem with me is, and we get the same response. And I unfortunately was so freaked out by it, I left the room. I like got up and swore and just like stormed out because I was like, this is happening again. I don't get it. So I have a reputation in the afterlife, apparently. So
do you think ghosts are just sitting around talking about this green haired girl?
I hope so.
I mean, that's kind of awesome, Ashley. I don't know.
It is, but you know, it's one of those things, again, like you can have these awesome experiences and still not have any scientific backing as proof. And so you can't use it as evidence still. And that's one of the things that's so fascinating with the paranormal and why I'm so excited that Brandon is doing what he is doing, because we can all have stories, we can all have experiences, but we can't all have actual evidence-based proof. And that is what Brandon is bringing to this field. And that is one of the most exciting things, because this has been around for a long time. We've been in the community for a long time. And now there are finally real steps going forward to make this a legitimate science.
And Ashley, to follow up your point, I know you are not a fan of spirit boxes. And Brandon, I'm going to guess you don't go that route either. Do you believe that spirit boxes, because they've become wildly popular, is it because, in your opinion, it just makes for good television more so than credible evidence?
Absolutely. If you want to go into a location and film for 4 hours and make a 42-minute TV show, you're going to utilize a device like that because it's going to provide results every single time. There's a show that's been on air for a long time. That's all they do. They use pseudoscience. They use devices that are meant to give false positives, and they're guaranteed a haunted location every time. And that's good business if you're trying to make a TV show. But if you're trying to do factual research and collect empirical data, it's goofy.
And that show that you speak of that shall remain unnamed, they tend to scream and yell and freak out a lot. Mm-hmm. In all three of your views, do you feel like that kind of behavior, and look, maybe it's a natural behavior, maybe they're just jumpy. Do you feel like that inhibits and keeps an investigation from being more effective when you're constantly like, ah! You know, like that's, I always wondered that.
Absolutely. I think that the energy you put out is the energy you receive. So if you go into a location, you're calm, kind of quiet, you set that tone, you're in someone else's space in theory, right? That's what we're thinking, that you're going in and trying to communicate with energy that has and retains a consciousness. I always very much believe in Einstein's theory that energy is neither created nor destroyed. Now, the question is that we're all made up of energy, right? What happens to that energy when we die, and does it retain a consciousness? So when I go into a location, I want to be as calm and as professional as possible and really set and open a line of communication by showing respect and talking to these entities as people. I think that's going to go a lot further than demanding and commanding these entities, or whatever you want to call them, to show themselves and speak to them on your terms. I think it's a dangerous precedent being set. And I think that hopefully as time goes on and we give more factual data and scientific protocol, that will change. And hopefully we can do that.
I agree. And I think the other thing that bothers me about shows that do that is that it kind of stops it from being scientifically proven, because you're just screaming over all of your data. Like, you're just, it's just like, did you hear that? Did you hear that? No, I didn't hear it. Even in the show, because you screamed real loud through the whole thing. So, I mean, that's one of the problems I have with a lot of.
I'm on the same page. I mean, like I said, Brandon and I have investigated so many times, and it's really important to us. And what we've always done is introduce ourselves when we do start an investigation, because you are in somebody else's home and you need to give them that respect. And even if you don't believe in the paranormal, like, you still believe in energy and you still believe in just everything around it is you can't be angry and yelling and negligent about what you're doing. I've worked with some of those people on the other show before, and yes, they're really fun to work with, but there have been times where I've gotten into arguments with them because they want to be this really loud and aggressive. And I'm like, no, we need to have a very respectful approach, because imagine 100 years from now, we're those spirits. And I would be so angry if somebody came into my home yelling at me to show myself. It would be terrible. And then I would become angry and I would just do stupid things, I'm sure, as a ghost, to make their investigation miserable, you know? So I don't know. I think that if you give respect, you're going to get respect. And I want to make sure that I always go into investigation being as respectful to those people as possible.
I'm glad you all said that, because I'm by far the least experienced out of the four of you. But I kind of feel like in some people, the whole love and fascination for the paranormal has kind of been lost along the way over the past decade, especially when we're seeing more television shows. Because to me, my outlook on the paranormal is the fact that, you know, we know what's out there. The question is, why are these people still here? Because my overall thought process is, a lot of these people don't want to be there. So why don't we try and find a way to make them feel comfortable or to help them cross over? And you really don't see anyone trying to do that. It's more just about getting reactions. And I get it. It's Hollywood, it's television, but I just feel like that's been lost on a lot of people.
That's a good point, you know, and it depends on your protocol and what your purpose is for investigating the paranormal, right? There are some people out there that do go in specifically just to cross over or cleanse, things of that nature. You know, for me, I'm more on the scientific side, so I'm about collecting data. I do look at them as people, and I do look at, you know, possible entities as retaining a human consciousness. But my job and my mindset is not to help per se. That might sound bad, might sound crude a little bit, but that's never been my goal. My goal has always been to go in and collect data and you know, push the field forward, you know, from a scientific perspective. But there are a lot of people out there doing great work with trying to cross over entities and help them in that regard. So there's a lot of that you don't see on TV.
Hey, every team needs an Egon, and you are Egon. Oh man, this is everything we could have expected. Like, this was such an amazing conversation.
Where can people find all information about your ongoing investigations, your filmmaking, like everything, like all the things that you have your hands in?
Right. Absolutely. There's actually going to be a big announcement coming here soon. Something that Mustafa Gadalari and I have been working on. That's really going to push this build forward. We're very excited about it. We've been working on this for a pretty extended period at this point. I think that people are really going to be blown away by what it is and how it's going to help this field and really push that scientific perspective. So there'll be an announcement about that in the near future, hopefully. But you can find anything to do with myself, APRA, as well as the investigations at brandonjalvis.com. That's kind of the source for it all. You can find all my social media, everything there. So, but something soon is going to be announced. Mustafa Gadalari and I are going to really try and push this field forward. And we hope that what we're about to do is going to really help and implement that scientific protocol.
Well, trust me when I say you will have three people championing that film as much as humanly possible when that does happen. We're all very excited to see it. But Brandon Alves, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Always a pleasure.
Ashley, when you said Brandon Alves was going to be amazing, you were not kidding.
Mm-mm. Not kidding at all. That man is a gift. He's been a friend for a long time. Even to this day, even though we are as close as we are, I still consider him a mentor, and I love him so much. Everything he does is just fantastic, and I'm so excited for what he's going to do for the community.
As far as special guests, I mean, what a way to kick it off. And we have so many more special guests coming up in the upcoming episodes, and hopefully some listener voicemails. We don't have any today, but hey, we're still building the listenership. We're going to get voicemails. But if you want to give us your paranormal experiences, it's real simple. Call 818-660-6191 and leave us your experience.
We'd love to hear it. We're so excited to hear all of these new stories. Anytime I tell somebody I do anything paranormal, everybody has a ghost story to tell me. So we're ready to hear yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, share with us. Share it. Share us. I don't know.
And Anastasia, you're the wizard. You're almost the DJ here. Where can people find the show currently? Because we're going to be just about everywhere, correct?
We are going to be everywhere. But currently, right now, we're on Anchor FM and we are on Spotify. And they'll just keep updating so much more. So look up for us on iTunes and Stitcher throughout the week. And also, you can support us by going to anchor.fm and sending us some moolah if you won't. But also we're setting up a Patreon, which will be www.patreon.com/hauntsandhops. So look for content there.
Perfect.
What kind of content are we going to have there, Quasto?
Oh, whatever people on Patreon want to see. I mean, you know, we would like to have maybe footage of investigations because ghosts don't abide by quarantine. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. They don't. That's true.
There's a lot of extra goofy content of us being on StreamYard, video content that we can just throw together. And also, if people have questions or if they want to have a Q&A, I mean, why not? We can do that too. The world is our oyster on Patreon, I think, right?
And I got to say, us all being in the entertainment industry, we all have hilarious reactions to the stories that we hear. And so if you want to see how we really feel about things, you will see it in the videos because we record every episode with video. So come support us and check it out and get ready to laugh a lot.
And find us on all social media platforms at Haunts and Hops. And as always, tell a couple of friends. We'd appreciate it. Let's all say goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, tell a couple of friends and please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're listening on, especially if it's iTunes and Apple Podcasts. We appreciate you.